we had a big party. There was about 80 or 100 people, and I got my nephew's niece. Are you going to edit this?
Hello there. Welcome to the Eric's Piano School podcast, hosted by yours truly, Eric Reinhardt. I'm a pianist and educator in the Orange County, California area. The purpose of this podcast is to learn the best practices for studying the piano. This is the perfect resource if you're a parent of a piano student, an adult studying the piano seeking for the latest tips and tricks to learn faster, or if you're a teacher hoping to improve your own students' learning progress. Hopefully I can be of service to you. Please enjoy this episode. Hello, Eric's Piano School podcast listeners. I'm interviewing Tim Topham of the Tim Topham Inner Circle based in Melbourne, Australia. And I'm really excited for interviewing Tim. I got to meet Tim back in Orange County in late June 2018. And after following him for several years, it was quite a surreal experience to be able to have coffee with the man himself. And I was very moved by his unique perspective on having a balanced life in piano. As musicians, we can often get pretty neurotic about our practice and our playing and being regimented and earning achievements and taking exams. And so I am really excited to have Tim on the show. Here's a brief bio of Tim. Tim is an expert in creativity and innovation in music education. He helps music teachers build thriving modern studios centered around creative, engaging teaching that resonates with today's students. Tim hosts the popular Creative Piano Teaching Podcast. He writes regularly at timtopham.com and speaks at local international conferences like MTAC in June 2018. He also mentors hundreds of teachers through his online professional development community called the Inner Circle, which I am a member of. In 2017, Tim was consultant editor of the Australian Music Examination Board's Piano for Leisure series, Four Exam Books, and his writing and training courses have been featured in American Music Teacher, The Piano Teacher, and a host of music education journals around the world. He holds an MBA in Educational Leadership and an Associate of Music in Australia. As you can tell, he has a wide variety of academic background in music, so I can't wait to pick his brain about getting the best possible results for our students. And if you're a teacher, hopefully being able to get those results on a regular basis for your students. Anyway, take care. Let's get into the show. So we're listening to Eric's Piano School podcast, and I have with me here today Tim Topham of the Inner Circle. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Eric. Very cool to be on your new show. It's great.
Yeah, I really appreciate you making the time at 8 a.m. Melbourne time. Melbourne, right?
Melbourne, yep.
Okay, awesome. And so really the reason I wanted to have you on the show, you have a very unique perspective of your, just the way that you approach teaching. You don't get overly neurotic about things. And you enjoy pop music, you can enjoy piano and different varieties of art forms. And so that's kind of where I want to explore today. But just a really basic question, just because I'd like to hear it straight from the source. How would you sort of describe your teaching philosophy?
I would describe it as really focusing on music reading not being the most important thing in the world. So I kind of pigeonhole music education into two different camps. And I often, when I speak, use the imagery of an iceberg, and the tip of the iceberg and then the rest of the iceberg under the water, if you can picture that. And the tip of the iceberg stuff to me is reading, interpretation and performance, those traditional classical skills that most teachers focus on and most teachers and probably parents who are listening experienced as children when they learned, if they learned piano. Under the iceberg are all the other things, which is what I tend to focus on because I think they have much more value in many ways, although there's nothing wrong with interpretation and performance and reading. But what about the creative arts of composing and improvising, and teaching students to play chords and sing along, teaching students to read a lead sheet and play with a band, teaching students to be able to play along with and accompany a choir or another instrument. These are the kinds of skills that I think have most benefit for students in a lifelong pursuit of their instrument. And so that's really where I focus most of my time. That's not to say, as I mentioned before, that I don't teach reading, and I personally love classical music if I have time to practice, which I try and do more, but it's very difficult. I play classical music. I play Chopin mainly because I love Chopin's music, and I know that the biggest impact for me in my ability to play and my skills is driven by playing hard classical music, because you need the technique. But for students, I think it really comes down to a mix, a really broad look at all those different skills that they will need if they want to keep playing for the rest of their life and maybe even make a living from their music.
Awesome. So what I'm hearing is that it's just you want to give them a larger sampling so that they can find it what it is that they like, engage them in some way to meet them where they're at, and to have the piano speak to them, essentially.
Yeah, totally. And for some students, that might be that they really want to perform classical music at a high level on stage in a bow tie.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I really think that the percentage of students for whom that is a desired outcome is really, really small. And I think that's a good thing, because in reality, that's not the kind of way that many adults are able to either support themselves or enjoy music with their friends. It'll be like last weekend when I had my dad's 80th, had my nieces and nephews singing lots of music, and I was reading chord charts, and we did a sing-along with the whole group, everyone in the audience who were sitting around at their tables. It was just really, really cool. Yeah. And it was all part of those skills that I have of just being able to pick up pretty much anything, be able to get people together, form a little group, and put on a bit of a show. That's what people love, and that's what I love doing as an adult musician as well. So if I'm able to pass some of those skills on to my students, then I feel that, you know, they'll hopefully be able to do that when they're my age.
Yeah, so just talking from my own personal experience, those like those skills, say lead sheet playing, improvisation around certain chords and things like that, that was like that came to me second. I started out with like note reading and just the very formalized approach of music education. So I don't think that you are conveying the idea that like you don't need to practice these skills. They are just as like you can invest as more time into them to acquire these skills. So just because it is quote unquote fun doesn't mean it has to be necessarily completely casual. Is that accurate?
It really is about a holistic approach. So yes, you know, reading is a really fundamental skill, and I was using that at my dad's 80th on the weekend. But it's just one part of the skill of a musician. Is reading. And so that's why I think, yes, it's all important, but there's just way too much of a focus on only reading and performance, particularly of the classical composers. That's where I think we've got it wrong. More about balance.
So in the acquisition of these skills, I'm kind of just curious, from a teacher's perspective, what sort of things are you communicating about practice with your current parents and students? I know that they're generally older, but how do you handle that?
So I've got lots of different ideas when it comes to practice, and I'm pretty flexible about it. So I've told the story a couple of times of one of my students who has just moved from what you guys would call elementary to middle school. And it was a really big transition for him this year. And he really fell off the practice wagon at the start of the year and was not doing anything at all because he had just a lot of stuff going on in his life and he was having trouble at school and just didn't feel he had any friends, etc. So, you know, a lot of teachers that I see and hear about, particularly in discussion groups, will just really quickly jump to that whole, well, he's not practicing, he hasn't practiced for 3 weeks, so I'm going to let him go. I'm going to ask him to leave my studio. And, you know, for me, that's just heartbreaking because for this kid, it's not that he doesn't want to, it's just that it's not really possible at the moment and he just can't prioritize it in his head. So I just said to him and his mum, It's totally cool. I don't care if you don't practice for the next few weeks. Totally fine. Let's just have some fun in our lessons. Let's read some cool music. Let's play some fun pop tunes or whatever that he's working on. And keep it ticking over so that when he's ready and he's feeling more stable and settled, he can come back to it. And sure enough, that did happen. And, you know, he's one of those kids who doesn't always put in hours and hours of work each week. But I'm okay with that. I really am, particularly when you're teaching teenagers, which is the main group that I teach, or I guess, you know, 10, 11 plus. So I would encourage teachers to be really flexible with it. For the parents listening out there, then it's a really challenging situation. You want your child to practice, but you don't want to be the nag, the person who's just telling them all the time. But it almost has to be a little bit like brushing teeth. It's just an expected thing. Children won't, although they still will complain that they have to brush their teeth, but they kind of get that it's just something that they have to do. It's a little bit like eating or showering. Mm-hmm. So to make piano like that, just part of the routine, even if it's a short period of time, that can be a good way to go. But I do understand there's a really, it's a challenging time for parents of piano students in trying to work out where that balance lies about how much you tell them and force them and how much they seem to enjoy it themselves.
My personal experience with music upbringing, I guess, is my parents were pretty laissez-faire. And so I wish that they would have pushed me harder. And so I end up wanting to push my students harder and have them go beyond their limits, because sort of as humans, we're a little bit lazy and we don't want to be uncomfortable. And that's a similar idea that I communicate to all of my parents, is just working it into a sort of routine.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's routine's really important. Some students will practice and love it and just do everything themselves, and that's great. Others will not do anything and will need a lot of work, and there'll be kids who are right in between. So it's just a matter of managing it. But hopefully the teacher, like Eric, is giving them lots of things that they are doing at the piano that they want to actually sit down and do. And I think that's really crucial. And that's another place where just teaching the standard reading can really miss the ball with a lot of kids. So if the kids are only getting fed one type of musical experience and they don't like it, then I get it. I can see why they'd be bored or frustrated. But if they're getting a whole range of different things that they can do, then at least they've got variety and they've got a depth of experience that they can draw on. And hopefully one of those activities will really capture and hook them in.
Would you tell me if this is accurate in your own experience? For me to find out what a kid likes, it takes about 6 months of regular, maybe 3 to 6 months of just like throwing stuff at them, because what one student likes, the other student is indifferent towards.
Right.
And it's just a constant guess and check to see what they'll respond to.
Yeah, that's 100% true. And they change as well. A kid that really loved the classical piece will hate classical music and want to play jazz the next month. So it's another reason why teachers have to be really flexible these days in their approach and really open to working with students and helping them learn what they want to learn, as well as what they know they need to learn. But having that element in every lesson with pretty much any age student, or any age over 10, let's say, where the child is actually choosing a part of the lessons, what they are learning, I think is really important. I think under 10, then I think it's really driven by the teacher, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my main demographic right there.
Under 10s?
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. Somewhere between the 8 and 12 year old yeah. range. But I still offer them choose this or choose that.
Yeah, that can be great. Yeah, I guess what I was touching on there is the idea that I love, which is with particularly with teenage students, is saying, okay, give me a list of some things that you really love to listen to, and trying to work out whether we can play one of those things, because that's a huge hook in for a teenager. Mm-hmm. So I don't do that so much for younger students, but I think for any age student, just about having, okay, here's three cool pieces that you could choose now. You choose the one you want. That's, you know, I think most teachers do that. I hope they do anyway. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you love about the teenage age demographic most? What's your favorite thing about working with those students?
I think that you can have a really positive impact in a really challenging part of a child's life. So you can be that quite a steady influence week after week during a pretty tumultuous period of any child's upbringing or sort of development. And I think you can, if you do it right, you can really build great, strong relationships with those children, and also give them, what I love doing is giving them the skills in which they can start to self-identify as a musician because of the things that they're playing and the things that they're able to do. Mm-hmm. So, for example, a teenager who can, even if they're quite a new beginner, can play something that their friends know and can recognize, will get an instant peer group push and positive energy from their friends going, oh my God, Eric can play that. How cool is he? You know, mm-hmm. Eric, should play something else. And Eric goes back to his teacher and says, like, teach me something else that I can do. And teenagers can really build this, and I don't want to sound flippant about it. You know, that's only one part of what any child should be learning at the piano. But giving them those kinds of things, which give really strong support from their family and friends and peer group, that they are a pianist, they can play piano. That is a really important identification for students as they go through their teenage years, because if they keep that identification up, that I am a pianist and I'm actually kind of cool and I'm pretty good at this, then they will eventually get over that hump that sometimes happens in ages 11 to 13 where they quit.
Yeah.
If you can keep that identification up and keep all the positive energy around them from things that you're giving them in the studio, then they might just get over that hump. And when they do, they're more likely to play for the rest of their life.
Mm-hmm. So I've been pondering this topic of like the value of music education as whole, and seeing like what is so good about it, what is so important about art if it's not productive in its certain sense. And so we want to get these players to play for lifetime, outside of, well, joy is probably one of the things that you might say, just like pure joy of expressing yourself. But is there anything that you can think of just as a generalities that why you think art is so valuable?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots, and the research points to a lot of things going on in the brain, which are really important and that students can't get from anywhere else. So making connections in the brain and enabling students to think creatively, not just in music, but in other areas, that there's research about that. Yeah. There's also good research just to suggest that students who learn an instrument and practice that instrument tend to have a better sense of self-discipline and perhaps a bit of self-organization and things like that, because they're learning routines and ways to decipher information on a page. And again, that can lead over into other subjects. So I think a lot of what music education gives students, while it might not be that, you know, suddenly they're performing a concerto on a stage, they're actually absorbing lots of skills and developing brain connections and chemistry and things that are going on in them that they will be able to apply to other subject areas and other areas of their life generally, mm-hmm. even if it's not immediately apparent. And as I say, I'm sure you could link up. There's plenty of research out there about that, so I won't go into all the details. But you know, there's very strong indications that it has a really wide ranging impact on students.
Yeah, I think a lot about just mastery in general, how meaningful of a journey that is, and being jealous when I saw in like my, I think it was freshman or sophomore year of high school, a student played the Revolutionary Etude, like at the like talent show. And I was like, I had such an emphasis on team sports and things like that as a kid. But there wasn't like that, my one thing that I was just like supremely great at throughout adolescence or whatever. So, so I often think about the value of just trying to master something because it sets you on a purpose to do something every single day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that whole idea of, you know, here's this big thing I've got to learn. You break it down in chunks. You start small, you repeat things to make sure they're ingrained. You pull things apart, you put them back together. You know, these are all really useful learning outcomes.
Mm-hmm. So what was it like? So we've been on this topic of enjoying music and exploring other skills that are centered around music education other than note reading. So what was it like putting together the exam board, like being a part of that?
It was an interesting experience because I had previously had some difficult times, let's say, with the exam boards because of some of the writing that I'd put out earlier on about exam boards and my thinking around them. And so it was actually great to reconnect and for them to see the value in what I was able to offer and take on board some of the suggestions that I had regarding that that series of books. So yeah, I really do enjoy exploring repertoire with students and finding cool new stuff that's out there. And there are so many living composers now creating great music that we're able to access because of our connectivity online, that it was just so good to share some of this with teachers who might not have found it before and are perhaps a little bit stuck in a rut with their music choices because they're the pieces that they've always chosen. I would just get so bored if I always gave students the same pieces. So it's much more likely for me that I'm always giving them something different, which is great because it puts the pressure on me. I've got to think, I've got to plan how I'm going to teach particular aspects of it. I've got to think about it more. So it just keeps me active and busy too. That said, I still have some favorites as we all do.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I answered your question.
I'll take it.
And now a word from our sponsor. This podcast is brought to you by Keyboard Concepts, home of the Busendorfer Schimmel, Yamaha, and Knabe pianos. The Orange County store is my preferred piano store here locally, but they also have stores in Santa Monica, Sherman Oaks, and Pasadena. They always have an excellent selection, a musical repertoire that I buy for my students to play. My personal favorite piano is the Model C 189 6'3"